This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It's been 30 years since the first drug was approved to treat HIV/AIDS. That was AZT in 1987. Since then, antiretroviral drugs have been helping people live longer, healthier lives after their diagnosis. Now, a new drug may also help prevent HIV infection in the first place. Joining me now to talk about advances in HIV treatment is Philip Chan. He's assistant professor of medicine at Brown University, where he studies how HIV is transmitted in the community. He just spoke at the annual HIV Primary Care Conference in Provincetown, and he's joining us from the studios at Brown University. Dr. Chan, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So men who have sex with men make up an estimated 2% of the population, but 55% of people living with HIV in the U.S. I mean, if you take these current diagnosis rates, 1 in 6 gay and bisexual men will be diagnosed with HIV in their lifetime. When you hear it that way, it doesn't seem like this is an epidemic that is under control in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in general, across the population, HIV, we are making good progress in HIV, but among gay and bisexual men, and certainly certain populations of gay and bisexual men, we are seeing rates that are remaining stable or even increasing slightly. So we are making progress. That's sort of the message overall, but we have lots more to do, especially in addressing HIV among gay and bisexual men.
There's no cure for HIV/AIDS. Why is that such a difficult target?
So HIV is a pretty smart virus, unfortunately. And what that means is that it integrates into your cells within your body, and especially these cells that can last as long as 60 or 70 years. So we have very effective medications, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second, and the medicines will kill the HIV when they see it. But HIV is very wily. It hides within these long-lived cells. And if you were ever to stop these medicines, it's able to replicate and go on infect other cells. So at this time, unfortunately, there is no cure for HIV. The treatments themselves are super effective. I do anticipate, though, that in our lifetime, in the future, there's a lot of money going into HIV cure research, that we will have a cure. So it is on the horizon, which is very exciting, but it's still probably a little ways away.
And how much have treatments, you know, you said they're very effective. How much have they changed or advanced in the 30 years since AZT was approved for HIV/AIDS treatment?
Yeah, so 10, 20 years ago with AZT, it used to be that there's only one drug approved for HIV. It used to be people had to take multiple pills multiple times a day. We're at the point now where there's a lot of single tablet regimens. So the standard for HIV treatment are 3 medicines. Now those 3 medicines can be within one single pill. And there's about 6 or 7 single tablet regimens. These medicines are very effective at controlling, killing HIV. They have minimal side effects now, and people live, and the key message is that people live up to a normal life expectancy when diagnosed and taking these medicines on a daily basis.
Now, there is a new pill, Truvada, that you could actually take each day that would help prevent HIV infection in the first place. How does it work, and how well does it work?
Yeah, so this was a very exciting advance in the field of HIV prevention. This new medicine called PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, a pill that you can take every day before you're exposed to HIV. There's been many studies done now that show that it's very effective at preventing HIV infection. It's not 100%, but we think it's pretty close. The medicine itself is called tenofovir emtricitabine. It's actually medicine that we use to treat HIV infection. So when someone has HIV, we give them this medicine plus some other medicines that kill HIV. The studies show that if you don't have HIV and you take this medicine by itself, it builds up in your body, and if you're ever exposed to HIV, it kills it. You do have to take it once a day. It's very safe and well-tolerated. Sometimes people do have some mild side effects, but usually they go away when people stay on them for a period of time.
I mean, condoms are also known to be a highly effective way to prevent HIV transmission. I'm guessing they're going to be a lot cheaper than a newly developed drug. You don't have to take a pill every day. Why go in the direction of a preventative pill, of a pharmaceutical way of preventing HIV/AIDS?
Yeah, great question. I think that we have to remember that condoms, even to prevent pregnancy, and the data, the literature will show that even when people use condoms consistently every time, or at least try to, they're not 100%. We often hear the number quoted that condoms are 99% effective in preventing pregnancy, preventing STDs. But the literature shows, and real-world studies show, that people who try and do use condoms consistently, they have about a 70 to 80% chance of preventing pregnancy as well as HIV or other STDs. That means that we do need other potential options to prevent HIV and other STDs, and PrEP is one of those options. PrEP is not right for everyone, but it's sort of another tool in the toolkit, if you will, for certain people. There's a subset of people for various reasons that just don't use condoms, and PrEP is really the another option, especially for people that don't like or don't use condoms consistently.
I mean, I'm wondering if there are also other populations that this might be the right way to go, whether that's women who might be interested in actually conceiving a child with an HIV-infected partner, or people for whom sexual transmission is not the main risk. If it's IV drug use that perhaps is the main risk, could this pill be a way of getting at some of those other populations with different risks?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. This medicine will work regardless of transmission route for HIV. You know, you mentioned in the beginning about gay and bisexual men, and here in New England especially, we see a lot of HIV. And across the U.S., the number one group is gay and bisexual men. So we've done a lot of our focused outreach, a lot of education activities, et cetera, focused on improving knowledge and use of PrEP among gay and bisexual men. But PrEP can be used in many different populations. It can be used to prevent HIV among injection drug users, among women who want to be pregnant, et cetera. So it is another approach. It's not going to be right for everyone, but it's certainly another option for people at higher risk.
How commonly is it being used right now?
So we're still in the early phases of implementation of PrEP across the country. It's the PrEP use is exponentially increasing, and it has so in the last couple of years. You know, there's hundreds of people here in the state of Rhode Island. There's a few thousand people in the state of Massachusetts, and it's increased over the last few years, but we still have a lot to go. Data from the CDC does suggest that there's a substantial number of people that could benefit from this medicine. And again, it is a personal decision to use it, but we have found that there's still pretty low levels of awareness in the community in general. So we've been working to address that.
You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with Philip Chan, assistant professor of medicine at Brown University, where he studies how HIV is transmitted in the community. Philip, this pill that we've been talking about, that, as you said, is basically medicines that kill HIV on exposure, that's one way of preventing. But wouldn't something like a vaccine be an even better way? Is there any progress toward a vaccine for HIV/AIDS?
There is certainly progress. You know, there's one study a few years ago that did show some efficacy of a vaccine. In general, though, there are not any good candidate vaccines out there. I still think we're probably 10, 20 years away. Obviously, a vaccine is the ultimate prevention tool, but it's not on the horizon. There's millions, you know, tens of millions of dollars being pumped into finding a vaccine. There's a lot of basic research. That's why it's important to fund basic research for advances like that. But at this time, we're still a little bit of ways away from finding a vaccine.
Okay, so we don't have a vaccine. We don't have a cure. But research has shown that the earlier a person is diagnosed, the better. And one advance that's helping with that is actually an at-home HIV test. How does that work?
So there's one approved HIV test. It's called the OraQuick In-Home HIV Single-Use Test. You can buy it at any pharmacy for $39.99. This is a fantastic test. It's a rapid HIV test. You basically take out this applicator stick and rub it around your gums once and put it into this solution, and in 20 minutes you have the results of your HIV test. It kind of looks like a pregnancy test, an at-home pregnancy test. You essentially have one line for negative, two lines for positive, and it's a very accurate test. It's the test that we use in community settings all the time to test for HIV. I will remind your listeners, though, that there is a window period for HIV. And what does that mean? That means that if someone is infected today, that there's going to be a period of time before these tests actually turn positive, because the tests actually measure what's known as an antibody response. That window period is generally between 1 and 3 months, which means that if you are infected today, that the test will not be positive between 1 and 3 months.
How often in your experience are patients coming in saying, I tested positive at home, you know, can you help me get treatment?
It's a small subset, but there's definitely a handful of people every year. There are lots of people who are using the home-based HIV test. As I mentioned, it's really a fantastic test. We do see a lot of people who come in, though, for other STD testing. So we do encourage, certainly HIV is important. It's the topic of today. But we are also seeing an exponential increase in other STDs. And it's important in general to be tested not just for HIV, but for these other STDs as well. And there is no at-home test for these other STDs, unfortunately.
Now, a recent study done at a health clinic in London found that there were benefits to offering a person HIV/AIDS treatment immediately after they receive the diagnosis. So they come in for testing, you get a positive, and the idea would be they'd walk out with some treatment that day. What's the benefit to that approach?
So the field is moving in this direction, and that's treating people as early as possible. So what are the benefits of early treatment? There's two. The first is for individually personal level benefits, in that getting someone on treatment as soon as possible preserves the immune system. Again, HIV is a virus that predominantly attacks your immune system, and over time, average of 6 to 8 years, the virus destroys the immune system until you're susceptible to other infections. At that point, you're termed to have AIDS, acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. And that's when you can get sick from other opportunistic infections, things that generally can kill you. The medicines prevent the degradation of the immune system. They preserve your immune system. They keep it healthy, so that people can live a long, healthy, normal life expectancy. The other benefit of early treatment, and importantly from a public health standpoint, is that early treatment prevents transmission to other people. As I mentioned, the medications are really effective at killing off HIV. They probably kill off in excess of 99% of HIV in the body. That means that if you're having sex or injecting drugs, etc., that there's minimal to no HIV in your fluids, which means that you're essentially very unlikely to transmit HIV to others. That's a key concept in the field of HIV, and it means that just testing people and getting people on treatment as early as possible, that we have the potential to address the HIV epidemic to reduce the number of new infections.
That all sounds really good, but there are some clinicians who are actually worried about this approach of very early treatment, you know, kind of same day diagnosis and treatment. So what are their concerns?
So there's two concerns. One is the HIV tends to need to be confirmed. So the tests that we have for HIV tend to be very good. They're, you know, 99%+ accurate, but they're still occasionally wrong. So we tend in the field of HIV to like to do at least 2 tests to confirm the diagnosis of HIV. So one concern would be that if someone receives a positive HIV test, that they may not actually have HIV and get started on treatment. So obviously that would be bad. So that's one concern. The second concern is that it's also standard in treating for HIV to check the HIV through a blood test for resistance. So that test usually comes back in a few days to a week.
And resistance to what?
Resistance to HIV medications. So the HIV over time can develop resistance to different medications. Some people, when they first get HIV, can have some resistance to some of the medications we use. It's not common, but it's anywhere between 5 to 10, 12%. So the other concern would be that if you're treating on day number one, that you don't have the results of this resistant test back. Now, people are choosing medicines that tend to be very effective, but there is still the potential that the person may have resistance and you're choosing a medication that they may be resistant to.
Is there any concern about the psychological state of patients? You've just received a life-altering diagnosis. Are those patients really ready to jump into a treatment regimen that, you know, you've got to be taking your meds every day? You don't want to just drop off of them and be inconsistent. Is that a concern?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's actually a range of how people react, obviously, to such a life-changing diagnosis. There are some people that want to get on medications right away, and they're, you know, I want to get this started. You know, I've been diagnosed. And then there are certainly some people that need some more time to adjust, which is totally understandable. So I think it ranges the whole spectrum. You know, sometimes it takes some time to adjust.
Some of the work that you do is trying to reach out to underserved populations. Who are those underserved populations, and what are you doing to try to connect with them better?
Yeah, HIV is one of those diseases that really is impacted by a lot of so-called social determinants of health, and that includes low education levels, low income, housing stability, mental illness, substance use. So all these different factors really intersect your ability to reach out to people who may be at risk for HIV, as well as to get them into care when they're positive. We get a lot of funding from the state and federal sources to help help with these so-called wraparound services. So these are services like social workers, case managers, nurses that focus on adherence, outreach workers, people that really go in the community to engage these populations. We try our best through different initiatives, both at the state level and the clinic level, to reach out to these populations, to people that have some of these social determinants of health, to try to get them to come into HIV testing. But it's very, very, very challenging for many reasons. You know, it's for some of these populations, it's if I don't know where I'm going to have my next meal, if I don't know where I'm sleeping tonight, then testing for HIV is really going to be the last thing on my list. So there's a lot that we have to do as a society in order to get at HIV.
That's Philip Chan. He's assistant professor of medicine at Brown University. Dr. Chan, thanks so much.
Thank you, Heather.
Also, special thanks to David Orenstein for production assistance at Brown University. Up next, Cory Doctorow on his new novel that provides both a dystopian and a utopian take on our future. Living Lab continues after a short break.